BBC News at 3 o'clock. The campaign for Britain to leave the EU has been condemned as dishonest by the former Conservative Prime Minister, Sir John Major. Sir John, who wants the UK to stay in, said Leave campaigners had been deceitful and had misled voters by issuing what he called a galaxy of inaccurate information. The Conservative MP Boris Johnson dismissed the criticism. He said statistics used by the Leave campaign were reasonable. Voters in Switzerland have rejected a proposal to give a guaranteed minimum income to everyone living in the country legally. Swiss media says early results suggest 78% of people opposed the plan. Supporters had argued it would reward carers, but opponents warned it would encourage economic migrants. Police investigating the death of a pensioner from Suffolk have arrested a 61-year-old man in Leicester on suspicion of murder. Peter Stewart, who was 75 and from Weybred, had been missing for a week. A body was found on Friday night. Mr. Stewart's wife, Sylvia, is still missing. A woman has died after apparently being attacked by a shark off the west coast of Australia. It's the second fatal attack in the area in less than a week. Our correspondent John Donison sent this report.
Police say the 60-year-old woman was diving off the coast of Perth. A man who was swimming alongside her told officers he felt something brush past him and then saw a commotion in the water. A group of fishermen that arrived to help shortly afterwards said they believed the shark was longer than their 5.5-metre boat. It's the second such incident in less than a week. On Friday, Ben Gehring, a 29-year-old surfer, died 3 days after being badly bitten by a shark also just south of Perth.
Andy Murray is taking part in his first French Open final and a few moments ago took the first set 6-3. He is facing the world number one, Novak Djokovic, who is also looking for his first tournament win at Roland Garros. Both players lost their opening service game. BBC News.
In an hour's time, this month's book club features a poem which was denounced by tabloid newspapers as a torrent of filth. Tony Harrison wrote his controversial poem in 1985 after being angered by the graffiti which had been sprayed on his parents' grave by football fans in his hometown of Leeds. A filmed version directed by Richard Eyre caused controversy 2 years later when it was announced that it was to be broadcast on Channel 4. James Naughtie will be talking to the poet himself in an hour's time. And now on Radio 4, after a long absence, George Bernard Shaw returns to our airwaves in this new two-part adaptation of Major Barbara, starring Eleanor Tomlinson. It's January 1906, and Barbara's mission is to save souls in the West Ham Salvation Army shelter in London's East End. But the return of a long-lost family member could change everything. A battle of wills is about to begin.
Children of one father, and as sinners go, they are all the same, and their salvation will be as such. And it is waiting for them. It is waiting for you. It is waiting for all of us.
Major Barbara by George Bernard Shaw. Episode 1.
Mother? Mother? There you are. Morrison said you wanted to see me. What is the matter?
Presently, Stephen. I have nearly finished this letter.
Oh. Who left the speaker?
Don't begin to read. I shall require all your attention.
It was only while I was waiting.
Don't make excuses. I've not kept you waiting very long, I think.
Not at all.
And don't fiddle with your watch chain.
I beg your pardon.
Now, are you attending to me?
Of course.
No, it's not of course. I want something much more than your everyday matter-of-course attention. I'm going to speak to you very seriously, Stephen. I wish you would let that chain alone.
Have I done anything to annoy you, Mother? If so, it was quite unintentional.
nonsense. Oh, my poor boy, did you think I was angry with you?
What is it then? You're making me very uneasy.
I really cannot bear the whole burden of our family affairs any longer. You must advise me. You must assume the responsibility.
I? You know I have never interfered in the household.
I should think not. I don't want you to order the dinner.
I mean in our family affairs.
Well, you must interfere now, for they're getting quite beyond me.
I have thought sometimes that perhaps I ought, but really, Mother, I know so little about them. And what I do know is so painful. It is so impossible to mention some things to you.
I suppose you mean your father?
Yes.
My dear, we can't go on all our lives not mentioning him. It's cold in here. Let's go into the parlour. I've asked Morrison to light the fire.
The girls are all right. They're engaged.
Yes, I've made a very good match for Sarah. Charles Lomax will be a millionaire at 35. But that is 10 years ahead. And in the meantime, his trustees cannot, under the terms of his father's will, allow him more than £800 a year. So we'll have to find at least another £800 a year until that time. And even then they'll be as poor as church mice. And what about Barbara? I thought Barbara was going to make the most brilliant career of all of you.
Did you, Mother?
What does she do? Joins the Salvation Army. Discharges her maid, lives on £1 a week, and walks in one evening with a professor of Greek, whom she has picked up in the street, and who pretends to be a Salvationist and actually plays the drum for her in public, because he has fallen head over ears in love with her.
I was rather taken aback when I heard they were engaged. Cousins is a very nice fellow, certainly. Nobody would ever guess that he was born in Australia, but...
Oh, Adolphus Cousins will make a very good husband. After all, nobody can say a word against Greek. It stamps a man at once as an educated gentleman. Ah, Morrison.
Ah, milady, the fire is lit in the parlour.
Thank you, Morrison. Oh, yes, much warmer in here. Thank you, Morrison.
And I've also put in the tea things as requested.
Tea? At this time?
Would you like me to pour, milady?
We will manage. Leave us now.
Very good, milady.
Of course, I was thinking only of cousin's income. However, he's not likely to be extravagant.
Oh, don't be too sure of that. I know your quiet, simple, refined, poetic people like Adolphus Cousins, quite content with the best of everything. No, Barbara will need at least £2,000 a year. Besides, my dear, you must marry soon. I don't approve of the present fashion of philandering bachelors and late marriages, and I'm trying to arrange something for you.
It's very good of you, but perhaps I had better arrange that for myself.
Tea?
I couldn't.
You don't mind if I...
Of course not.
Nonsense. You're much too young to begin matchmaking. You would be taken in by some pretty little nobody. Of course, I don't mean that you're not to be consulted. You know that as well as I do. Now, don't sulk.
I'm not sulking. What has all this got to do with my father?
Oh, my dear Stephen. Where is the money to come from? It is easy enough for you and the other children to live on my income as long as we're in the same house. But I can't keep four families in four separate houses. You know how poor my father is. He has barely 7,000 a year now. And really, if he were not the Earl of Stevenage, he would have to give up society. He can do nothing for us. He says, naturally enough, that it is absurd that he should be asked to provide for the children of a man who is rolling in money. You see, my dear, your father must be fabulously wealthy because there is always a war going on somewhere.
You need not remind me of that. I've hardly ever opened a newspaper in my life without seeing our name in it. The Undershaft Torpedo, the Undershaft Quickfirers, the Undershaft 10-inch, the Undershaft Disappearing Rampart Gun, the Undershaft Submarine, and now the Undershaft Aerial Battleship. At Harrow, they called me the Woolwich Infant. At Cambridge, it was the same. A little brute at King's spoilt my Bible, your first birthday present to me, by writing under my name, son and heir to Undershaft and Lazarus, death and destruction dealers, address Christendom and Judea. But that was not so bad as the way I was kowtowed to everywhere because my father was making millions by selling cannons.
It's not only the cannons, but the war loans that Lazarus arranges under cover of giving credit for the cannons. Oh, you know, Stephen, it is perfectly scandalous. Those two men, Andrew Undershaft and Lazarus, positively have Europe under their thumbs. That is why your father is able to behave as he does. He is above the law.
He does not actually break the law.
Not break the law? He's always breaking the law. He broke the law when he was born. His parents were not married.
Mother, is that true? Perhaps I will have some tea after all. Thank you.
Of course it's true. That was why we separated.
He married without letting you know this?
Oh, no. To do Andrew justice, that was not the sort of thing he did. Besides, you know the Undershaft motto, unashamed. Everybody knew.
But you said that was why you separated.
Yes, because he was not content with being a foundling himself. He wanted to disinherit you for another foundling. That was what I could not stand.
But this is so frightful to me. To have to speak to you about such things.
Now, listen to me, patiently. The Undershafts are descended from a foundling in the parish of St. Andrew Undershaft in the city. That was long ago, in the reign of James I. Well, this foundling was adopted by an armourer and gunmaker. In the course of time, the foundling succeeded to the business, and from some notion of gratitude or some vow or something, he adopted another foundling and left the business to him. And that foundling did the same. Ever since that, the canon business has always been left to an adopted foundling named Andrew Undershaft.
And my father...
Your father was adopted in that way. And he pretends to consider himself bound to keep up the tradition and adopt somebody to leave the business to. Of course I was not going to stand that. There may have been some reason for it when the Undershafts could only marry women in their own class, whose sons were not fit to govern great estates. But there could be no excuse for passing over my son.
I'm afraid I should make a poor hand of managing a cannon foundry.
Nonsense. You could easily get a manager and pay him a salary.
My father evidently had no great opinion of my capacity.
Oh, stuff, child. You were only a baby. It had nothing to do with your capacity. More tea?
Yes, please.
Andrew did it on principle, just as he did every perverse and wicked thing on principle.
Then it was on my account that your home life was broken up, Mother. I am sorry.
Well, dear, there were other differences. I really cannot bear an immoral man. Your father didn't exactly do wrong things. He said them and thought them. And that was what was so dreadful. He really had a sort of religion of wrongness. Just as one doesn't mind men practicing immorality, so long as they own that they are in the wrong by preaching morality, so I couldn't forgive Andrew for preaching immorality while he practiced morality.
All this simply bewilders me. People may differ on matters of opinion or even about religion, but how can they differ about right and wrong? Right is right, and wrong is wrong, and if a man cannot distinguish them properly, he is either a fool or a rascal, that's all.
Oh, that's my own boy. And now that you understand the situation, what do you advise me to do? I must get the money somehow.
We cannot take money from him. I'd rather go and live in some cheap place like Bedford Square or even Hampstead, they'd take a farthing of his money.
But after all, Stephen, our present income comes from Andrew.
I never knew that. We are utterly dependent on him and his canons, then.
Certainly not. The money is settled. But he provided it, so... You see, it is not a question of taking money from him or not. It is simply a question of how much.
I would die sooner than ask him for another penny.
You mean that I must ask him. I have asked your father to come this evening.
This evening? Here, father.
Oh, now look at what you've done. Your grandmother's Minton.
Well, nothing's broken.
I said 9 o'clock. I'll have to prepare the girls and have asked Charles Lomax and Adolphus to dinner on purpose that they might be here. Andrew had better see them in case he should cherish any delusions as to their being capable of supporting their wives. Stephen, I shall need all your countenance and authority. Do stop stoking that fire. I don't know how Barbara will take it.
Barbara?
Ever since they made her a major in the Salvation Army, she never wears anything but that uniform. She has developed a propensity to have her own way and order people about, which quite cows me sometimes. I'm sure I don't know where she picked it up.
I can't think.
Anyway, Barbara shan't bully me. But still, it's just as well that your father should be here before she has time to refuse to meet him or make a fuss. Oh, don't look nervous, Stephen. It will only encourage Barbara to make difficulties. I'm nervous enough, goodness knows, but I don't show it. And stop stoking that fire!
Yes, Mother.
Baker's boy on the corner and took the loaves. Oh, they smell delicious.
Mmm, so they do. Put them here, Jenny. We have a few outside already. Rummy Mitchin's just arrived.
Oh, I haven't seen her in a while. Oh, and a man.
I'll get some bread and treacle out to them. I've got the milk on the tray.
Let me take it. Would you get the door, please, Jenny? I'll see to this.
Yes, Major. Sorry for the delay. I expect you're famished. Oh. We're waiting on the bread.
Most grateful, Major.
And it's good enough to eat.
I hope so. It's what the Lord has provided. I'll be back soon with my notebook to take your names.
Right you are.
Oh, many thanks.
Called out a meal? Good enough for you, perhaps, but what is it to me, an intelligent working man?
Working man? What are you?
Painter.
I dare say.
You dare say. I know. Every loafer that can't do nothing calls himself a painter. Well, I'm a real painter. Grainer, finisher, 38 bob a week when I can get it.
What's your name?
Price. Bronte O'Brien Price. Usually called Snobby Price for short.
Snobby's a carpenter, ain't he? You said you was a painter.
Not that kind of snob, but a genteel sort. What's your name?
Rummy Mitchins, sir.
Your health, Miss Mitchins.
Mrs. Mitchins.
What? Oh, Rummy. Yeah. Rummy. Respectable married woman Rummy getting rescued by the Salvation Army by pretending to be a bad one. Same old game.
Well, what am I to do? I can't starve. Them Salvation lasses is dear good girls, but the better you are, the worse they likes to think you were before they rescued you. Why shouldn't they have a bit of credit, poor loves? And where would they get the money to rescue us if we was to let on that we're no worse than other people?
Thieving swine. We're companions in misfortune, Rummy.
Who saved you, Mr. Price? Was it Major Barbara?
No, I come here on my own. I'm going to be Bronte O'Brien Price, the converted painter. Mm. I know what they like. I'll tell him how I blasphemed and gambled and whopped my poor old mother.
Used to beat your mother?
Not lightly, she used to beat me. No matter, you come and listen to the converted painter and you'll hear how she was a pious woman that taught me my prayers at her knee and how I used to come home drunk and drag her out of bed by snow white hairs and lemon to her with a poker. Yes, I'll play the game as good as any of them. I'll see somebody struck by lightning and hear a voice saying, Snobby Price, where will you spend eternity? I'll have a time of it, I tell you.
Come, pluck up, Mr. Shirley. I'll get you something to eat. You'll be all right then.
Let me help you with him, Miss Hill.
You're too kind.
I think nothing of it, poor old man. Cheer up, brother. You'll find rest and peace and happiness here. Hurry up with the food, miss. He's fair done.
Will do. Mr. Shirley, I'm just going to get you something to eat.
Right you are, miss. Thanks so much.
Here, buck up, Daddy. She's fetching you a thick slice of bread and treacle and a mug of sky blue. Sit yourself down here.
Keep up your old heart. Never say die.
I'm not an old man. I'm only 46. The grey patch come in my hair before I was 30. All he wants is 3 penny for their die. Am I to be turned on the streets to starve for it? My job given to a young man that can do it no better than me because I've black hair that goes white at the first change.
Here we are, Mr. Shirley. A nice thick slice of bread for you with treacle and some fresh milk.
There you are, brother. Ask a blessing and tuck that into you.
I never took anything before.
Come, come. The Lord sends it to you. But he wasn't above taking bread from his friends, and why should you be? Besides, when we find you a job, you can pay us for it if you like.
Yes, yes, that's true. I can pay you back. It's only a loan. Oh, Lord.
Oh, oh, Lord. Oh.
Well, Rummy, are you more comfortable now?
Oh, God bless you, lovey. You fed my body and saved my soul, haven't you?
Dear Rummy.
You, lady.
Who's he then?
Oh, I ain't seen him ever.
I know you. You're the one that took away my girl.
Your girl? I'm sorry, but
you're the one that set her against me. Well, I'm going to have her out. Not that I care a curse for her or you, see, but I'll let her know and I'll let you know. I'm going to give her a doing that'll teach her to cut away from me.
That ain't nice.
Oh, my arm.
Now, in with you and tell her to come out before I come in and kick her out. Tell her Bill Walker wants her.
No, you're hurting me. Please let go.
Hey, leave her alone.
What are you doing? You let go of Miss Hill.
She'll know what that means. And if she keeps me waiting, it'll be worse. You stop and jaw back to me, and I'll start on you, do you hear? There's your way, in you go.
What do you mean, pushing a woman on the ground?
Oh, Miss Hill, take my hand. Let me help you up. Oh, oh.
Thank you.
There ain't no way to treat anyone.
Easy there, mate. She ain't doing you no harm.
What are you calling mate? You gonna stand up for her, are you? Put up your hands.
Oh, you great brute, you...
Oh, God forgive you. How could you strike an old woman like that? Alice... My hand.
You, God forgive me again, and I'll God forgive you one on the jaw and stop you praying for a week. You anything to say against it, huh?
No, matey. She ain't anything to do with me.
Good job for you. I'd put 2 mils into you and fight with one finger after you, starved cur. Now, Miss Hill, you're going to fetch out Mog Habijam, and I'm going to knock your face off and fetch it myself.
Oh, please, someone go in and tell Major Barbara.
Quick, Rummy, inside, away from him.
You want to go in and tell your major of me, do you? Oh,
please don't drag my head. Let me go. God, give me strength.
You go and show her that. And tell her, if she wants one like it, to come and interfere with me.
I will.
Yeah. Finish your mess and get out of my way.
You take a liberty with me and I'll smash you over the face with this mug and cut your eye out.
Don't provoke me to lay it across yours. Cheer.
You like an old man to hit, don't you? When you're finished with the women. But you hit my son-in-law's brother.
Who's he?
Todger Fairmarle at Ball's Pond. Huh? Him that won £20 off the Japanese wrestler at the music hall by standing out 17 minutes 4 seconds against him.
I ain't no musical wrestler.
Will you box Todger Fairmarle if I put him on you? Say the word.
I'll stand up to any man alive if he was 10 Todger Fairmiles.
You box. Slap an old woman with the back of your hand. Hit a girl in the jaw and only make her cry. If Todger Fairmarle had done it, she wouldn't have got up inside of 10 minutes. No more than you would if he got on you. Yeah, I'd set a badger myself if I had a week's feeding in me instead of 2 months starvation.
I'm going in there to fetch my girl.
You're going to the station on a stretcher, more likely, and they'll take the gin and devil out of you there when they get you inside. You mind what you're about. The major here is the Earl of Stevenage's granddaughter.
Go on.
You'll see.
Well, I ain't done nothing to her.
Suppose she said you did. Who'd believe you?
God, there's no justice in this country. Do you think what them people can do? I'm as good as her.
Tell her, sir. It's just what a fool like you would do.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, miss.
Sit down, make yourself at home. Now then. Since you've made friends with us, we want to know all about you. So, names and addresses and trades.
Peter Shirley, fitter. Chucked out 2 months ago because I was too old.
Steady.
Teetotaler. Never been out of a job before. Good worker. And sent to the knackers like an old horse.
No matter. If you did your part, God will do his.
My religion's no concern of anybody but myself.
I know. Secularist.
Did I offer to deny it?
Well, why should you? My own father's a secularist, I think. Our father, yours and mine. Fulfills himself in many ways, and I dare say he knew what he was about when he made a secularist of you. So buck up, Peter. We can always find a job for a steady man like you.
Grateful, Major.
And what's your name?
What's that to you?
Hmm. I just put afraid to give his name. Any trade?
Who's afraid to give his name? If you want to bring a charge against me, bring it. The name's Bill Walker.
Bill Walker? Oh, I know. You're the man that Jenny Hill was praying for inside just now.
What are you writing? And what called is she to pray for me?
I don't know. Perhaps it was you that cut her lip?
Yeah, it was me that cut her lip. I'm not afraid of you.
How could you be, since you're not afraid of God? You're a brave man, Mr. Walker. It takes some pluck to do our work here, but none of us would dare lift a hand against a girl like that. For fear of her father in heaven.
I want none of your canting jaw. Oh, I suppose you think I'll come in to beg from you, like this damaged lot here.
Damaged, you say? Now, look.
Not me. I don't want your bread and scrape and cat lap. I don't believe in your God, no more than you do yourself.
Oh, I beg your pardon for putting your name down, Mr. Walker. I'll strike it out.
Hey, let my name alone. Ain't it good enough to be in your book?
Well, you see, there's no use in putting your name down unless I can do something for you, is there? What's your trade?
It's no concern of yours.
Just so. I'll put you down as the man who struck poor little Jenny Hill in the mouth.
See, I've had about enough of this.
What did you come to us for?
I come for my girl, see? I come to take her out of this and to break her jaws for her.
Blimey.
Now, you see, I was right about your trade. What's her name?
Her name's Mog Abidjan. That's what her name is.
Oh, she's gone to Canning Town, to our barracks there.
Are you lying to get shut of me?
I don't want to get shut of you. I want to keep you here and save your soul. Oh, you'd better stay. You're going to have a bad time today, Bill.
Who's going to give it to me? You, perhaps?
Someone you don't believe in. But you'll be glad afterwards.
I'll go to Canning Town to be out of the reach of your tongue. And if I don't find Mog there, I'll come back and do 2 years for you. So help me God if I don't.
It's no use, Bill. She's got another bloke.
What? That's Tornit.
One of her own converts. He fell in love with her when he saw her with her soul saved and her face clean and her hair washed.
What's she wash it for? The carroty slut? It's red.
It's quite lovely now because she wears a new look in her eyes with it.
Oh, I'll teach her to drop me as if I was dirt, and I'll teach him to meddle with my Judy. What's his bleeding name?
Sergeant Todger Fairmile.
I say, Sarah, are you going to finish your milk pudding?
I am.
Oh, rotter! It's delicious.
I suppose we'd better go through. Whatever can it be? Stephen was awfully quiet earlier.
Was he? I didn't notice.
You never notice anything, Trolley.
Your mother had something on her mind, I can always tell.
Mother?
May I come in?
Are Charlie and Dolly to come in?
Barbara, I will not have Charles called Charlie. The vulgarity of it positively makes me ill.
It's all right, Mother. Charlie's quite correct nowadays. I call Adolphus Dolly because I do. Are they to come in?
If they will behave themselves.
Come in, Dolly, and behave yourself.
Come in, Charlie.
Sit down, all of you. Stephen, move along on the settee.
Yes, Mother.
I don't in the least know what you're laughing at, Adolphus. I'm surprised at you, though I expected nothing better from Charles Lomax.
Barbara has been trying to teach me the West Ham Salvation March.
I see nothing to laugh at in that, nor should you, if you are really converted.
You were not present. It was really funny, I believe.
Ripping. Oh, be quiet, Charles. Now, listen to me, children. Your father is coming here this evening.
Oh, I say.
You're not called on to say anything, Charles.
Are you serious, Mother?
Of course I'm serious. It is on your account, Sarah, and also on Charles's. I hope you're not going to object, Barbara.
I? Why should I?
But, Barbara, aren't you shocked? I was.
My father has a soul to be saved like anybody else. He's quite welcome, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh. But really, don't you know?
What do you wish to convey, Charles?
Well, you must admit this is a bit thick.
Adolphus, you're a professor of Greek. Can you translate Charles Lomax's remarks into reputable English for us?
If I may say so, Lady Britt, I think Charles has rather happily expressed what we all feel. Mm. Homer, speaking of Autolycus, uses the same phrase.
Not that I mind, you know, if Sarah don't.
Thank like you. Have I your permission, Adolphus, to invite my own husband to my own house?
You have my unhesitating support in everything you do.
Sarah, have you nothing to say?
Do you mean that he is coming regularly to live here?
Certainly not. The spare room is ready for him if he likes to stay for a day or two and see a little more of you, but there are limits.
I wonder how the old man will take it.
Much as the old woman will, no doubt, Charles.
I didn't mean...
You didn't think, Charles. You never do, and the result is you never mean anything. Mm. And now, please attend to me, children. Your father will be quite a stranger to us.
I don't suppose he's seen Sarah since she was a little kid.
Not since she was a little kid, Charles, as you express it, with that elegance of diction and refinement of thought that seem never to desert you. Accordingly... I've forgotten what I was going to say. That comes of your provoking me to be sarcastic, Charles. Adolphus, will you kindly tell me where I was?
You were saying that as Mr. Undershaft has not seen his children since they were babies, he will form his opinion of the way you've brought them up from their behaviour tonight, and that, therefore, you wish us all to be particularly careful to conduct ourselves well, especially Charles.
Look here, Lady Britt didn't say that.
I did, Charles. Adolphus's recollection is perfectly correct.
All right, Mother. We'll do you credit.
Might I speak a word to you, my lady?
Nonsense, Morrison. Show him in.
Yes, my lady.
Does Morrison know who he is?
Of course. He has always been with us.
I remember when I was a child. Morrison used to...
Enough, Stephen.
Yes, Mother.
Must be a regular corker for him, don't you know?
Is this a moment to get on my nerves, Charles, with your outrageous expressions?
But this is something out of the ordinary, really.
Mr. Undershaft...
Good evening, Andrew.
How do you do, my dear?
You look a good deal older.
I am somewhat older. Time has stood still with you.
Rubbish. This is your family.
Is it so large? I'm sorry to say my memory is failing very badly in some things. I can see you are my eldest. I'm very glad to meet you again, my boy.
Look here, don't you know it? I say,
Andrew, do you mean to say that you don't remember how many children you have?
Well, I'm afraid I... they've grown so much. Am I making any ridiculous mistake? I may as well confess I recollect only one son. But so many things have happened since, of course.
Andrew, you are talking nonsense. Of course you have only one son.
Perhaps you will be good enough to introduce me, my dear.
That is Charles Lomax, who is engaged to Sarah.
My dear sir, I beg your pardon.
Not at all. Delighted, I assure you.
Then you must be my son. How are you, my young friend? He's very like you, my love.
You flatter me, Mr. Undershaft. My name is Adolphus Cousins, engaged to Barbara. That is Major Barbara Undershaft of the Salvation Army.
I see by the uniform. Barbara, my dear.
Father.
That is Sarah, your second daughter.
Hello, Papa.
Sarah, of course.
And this is Stephen Undershaft, your son.
My dear Stephen, I beg your pardon.
Not at all.
Mr. Cousins, I am much indebted to you for explaining so precisely.
Sit down, all of you. Sit down, Andrew.
Thank you, my love.
Do have my chair.
Most kind.
Takes you some time to find out exactly where you are, don't it?
My difficulty is that if I play the part of a father, I shall produce the effect of an intrusive stranger. And if I play the part of a discreet stranger, I may appear a callous father. Now, what can I do for you all?
You need not do anything, Andrew. You are one of the family. You can sit with us and enjoy yourself. Charles Lomax, if you can behave yourself, behave yourself. If not, leave the room.
I'm awfully sorry, Lady Britt, but I mean, really, you know, upon my soul.
Charlie, fetch your concertina and play something for us.
Perhaps that sort of thing isn't in your line, Mr. Undershaft.
I'm particularly fond of music.
Are you? Then I'll get it.
Do you play, Barbara?
Only the tambourine. But, Charlie, Charles is teaching me the concertina.
Is Cholly also a member of the Salvation Army?
He is not. He says it's bad form to be a dissenter, but I don't despair of Cholly. I made him come yesterday to a meeting at the dock gates and take collection in his hat. Hmm.
It is not my doing, Andrew. Barbara is old enough to take her own way. She has no father to advise her.
Oh, yes, she has. There are no orphans in the Salvation Army.
Your father there has a great many children and plenty of experience, eh?
Just so. How did you come to understand that?
Come in, Charles. Play us something at once.
Right, eh?
One moment, Mr. Lomax. I'm rather interested in the Salvation Army. Its motto might be my own, blood and fire.
But not your sort of blood and fire, you know.
My sort of blood cleanses. My sort of fire purifies.
So do ours. Come down tomorrow to my shelter, the West Ham shelter, and see what we're doing. We're going to march to a great meeting in the Assembly Hall at Mile End. Come and see the shelter and then march with us. It'll do you a lot of good. Can you play anything?
In my youth, I earned pennies and even shillings occasionally in the streets and in public house parlours by my natural talent for step dancing. Later on, I became a member of the Undershaft Orchestral Society and performed passably on the tenor trombone.
I say!
Many a sinner has played himself into heaven on the trombone thanks to the army.
Yes, but what about the canon business, don't you know? Getting into heaven's not exactly in your line, is it?
Charles!
Well, it stands to reason, don't it? I mean, the canon business may be necessary and all that. I mean, we can't get on without canons, but it isn't right, you know. On the other hand, there may be a certain amount of tosh about the Salvation Army. I belong to the established church myself, but still, you can't deny it's religion, and you can't go against religion, can you? At least, unless you're downright immoral, don't you know?
You hardly appreciate my position, Mr. Lomax.
I'm not saying anything against you personally, you know.
Quite so. But consider for a moment. Here I am, a manufacturer of mutilation and murder. I find myself in a specially amiable humour just now because this morning, down at the foundry, we blew 27 dummy soldiers into fragments with a gun which formerly destroyed only 13.
Well, the more destructive war becomes, the sooner it will be abolished, eh?
Not at all. The more destructive war becomes, the more fascinating we find it. No, Mr. Lomax, I am obliged to you for making the usual excuse for my trade, but I am not ashamed of it. I'm not one of those men who keep their morals and their business in watertight compartments. All the spare money my trade rivals spend on hospitals, cathedrals, and other receptacles for conscience money, I devote to experiments and researches in improved methods of destroying life and property. I've always done so, and I always shall. Therefore, your Christmas card moralities of peace on earth and goodwill among men are of no use to me. Your Christianity, which enjoins you to resist not evil and turn the other cheek, would make me a bankrupt. My morality, my religion, must have a place for cannons and torpedoes in it.
You speak as if there were half a dozen moralities and religions to choose from, instead of one true morality and one true religion.
For me, Stephen, there is only one true morality, but it might not fit you, as you do not manufacture aerial battleships. There is only one true morality for every man, but every man has not the same true morality.
Would you mind saying that again?
It's quite simple. As Euripides says, one man's meat is another man's poison, morally as well as physically.
In other words, some men are honest and some men are scoundrels.
Oh, bosh, there are no scoundrels.
Indeed. Are there any good men?
Not one. There are neither good men nor scoundrels. There are just children of one father, and the sooner they stop calling one another names, the better. You needn't talk to me. I know them. I've had scores of them through my hands. Scoundrels, criminals, infidels, philanthropists, missionaries, county councillors, all sorts. They are all just the same sort of sinner, and there is the same salvation ready for them all.
May I ask, have you ever saved a maker of cannons?
I haven't. Will you let me try?
Well, I will make a bargain with you. If I go to see you tomorrow in your salvation shelter, will you come the day after to see me in my cannon works?
Oh, and take care. It may end in your giving up the cannons for the sake of the Salvation Army.
Are you sure it will not end in your giving up the Salvation Army for the sake of the cannons?
I will take my chance of that.
And I will take my chance of the other. Where is your shelter?
In West Ham, at the sign of the cross. Ask anybody in Canning Town. Where are your works?
In Perivale St. Andrews, at the sign of the sword. Ask anybody in Europe.
I had Hadn't I better play something?
Yes. Give us Onward Christian Soldiers.
Well, if you are determined to have it, I insist on having it in a proper and respectable way. Charles, ring for Morrison to bring the family prayer book.
Really, Mother?
Oh, I say.
I'm afraid I must be going.
You cannot go now, Andrew. It would be most improper. Sit down. What will the servants think?
My dear, I have conscientious scruples. May I suggest a compromise? If Barbara will conduct a little service in the drawing room with Mr. Lomax as pianist, I will attend it willingly. I will even take part if a trombone can be procured.
Don't mock, Andrew.
Barbara, you don't think I'm mocking, my love, I hope?
No, of course not, and it wouldn't matter if you were. Half the army came to their first meeting for a lark. Come along. Come, Dolly. Come, Charlie. Sarah, Mother, Stephen.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war.
Will you take my arm, my love?
I will, Father.
Wait for me.
Adolphus, Lady Britomart, I have a very strong suspicion that you went to the Salvation Army to worship Barbara and nothing else.
Don't tell on me.
Mother, where are you going?
To the drawing room, of course. Are you coming, Stephen?
Certainly not. Never.
Welcome to the Salvation Army, West Ham. Don't look like you need shelter. Still, never can tell these days.
Good morning, my dear fellow.
Father, you came.
As agreed. Good morning, my dear.
Mr. Shirley, Peter, this is my father. I told you he was a secularist, didn't I? Perhaps you'll be able to comfort one another.
A secularist? Not the least in the world. My religion, I am a millionaire.
Then I'm afraid you and Mr. Shirley won't be able to comfort one another after all. Come on through, Father. You're not a millionaire, are you, Peter?
No, I'm proud of it.
Poverty, my friend, is not a thing to be proud of.
Who made your millions for you? Me and my like. What's keeping us poor? Keeping you rich. I wouldn't have your conscience, not for all your income.
I wouldn't have your income, not for all your conscience, Mr. Shirley.
And I...
You wouldn't think he was my father, would you, Peter? Will you go into the kitchen and lend a hand for a while? We are worked off our feet.
Yeah, I'm in their debt for a meal, ain't I?
Oh, not because you're in their debt, but for love of them, Peter. For love of them.
Love?
There, don't stare at me. In with you and give that conscience of yours a holiday. Mrs. Baines, Peter's volunteered to help you and Snobby in the kitchen.
Ah, volunteered?
This is my father, Mrs. Baines.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Undershaft?
How do you do?
And washing up over there is Mr. Price.
People call me Snobby.
Father, Mrs. Baines is a Salvation Army general and is here for the march today.
Ah. Oh. Have you been shown over the shelter, Mr. Undershaft? You know the work we're doing, of course.
The whole nation knows it, Mrs. Baines.
No, sir. The whole nation does not know it, or we should not be crippled as we are for want of money to carry our work through the length and breadth of the land. Let me tell you that there would have been rioting this winter in London, but for us.
You really think so?
I know it. I remember 1886, when you rich gentlemen hardened your hearts against the cry of the poor. They broke the windows of your clubs in Pall Mall.
And the Mansion House fund went up next day from £30,000 to £79,000. I remember quite well.
Well, won't you help me to get at the people? They won't break windows then. Come here, Snobby. Let me show you to this gentleman. Do you remember the window breaking?
My old father thought it was a revolution, Mum.
And would you break windows now?
Oh, no, Mum. The windows of heaven have been opened to me. I know that the rich man is a sinner like myself.
Father, I'll take you out into the yard. You'll be able to see some more of the work that we do.
I am sure you will find it illuminating, Mr. Undershaft.
No doubt, Mrs. Baines.
Not a bad morning for the middle of winter, ain't it?
Lovely sunshine, Rummy. Oh, Major, is this your father?
It is. Father, this is Jenny I told you about.
Poor Miss Hill. Barbara told me you're most unfortunate.
And there's the cur what done the mean deeds to me, Hannah.
That outpatient over here.
Oh, we shall cure him in no time. Just watch.
I shall be fascinated, my dear.
Been here all night, Bill.
What if I have?
It would be nice to just stamp on Mog Habajam's face, wouldn't it?
It's a lie. I never said so. Who told you what was in my mind?
Only your new friend.
What new friend?
The devil, Bill. When he gets round people, they get miserable, just like you.
I am miserable.
Well, if you're happy, then why don't you look happy, as we do?
I'm happy enough, I tell you. Why don't you leave me alone? What have I done to you? I ain't smashed your face, have I?
It's not me that's getting at you, Bill.
Who else is it?
Somebody that doesn't intend you to smash women's faces, I suppose. Some body or something that wants to make a man of you.
Who says I'm not a man?
There's a man in you somewhere, I suppose. But why did he let you hit poor little Jenny Hill? That wasn't very manly of him, was it?
I've done with it, I tell you. Chuck it. I'm sick of your Jenny Hill and her silly little face.
Then why do you keep thinking about it? Why does it keep coming up against you in your mind? You're not getting converted, are you?
Not me. Not likely, not off.
That's right, Bill. Hold out against it. Put out your strength. Don't let's get you cheap. Todger Fairmile said he wrestled for 3 nights against his salvation, harder than he ever wrestled with the Jap at the music hall. He gave in to the Jap when his arm was going to break, but he didn't give in to his salvation until his heart was going to break. Perhaps you'll escape that. You haven't any heart, have you?
I've got a heart the same as anybody else.
A man with a heart wouldn't have bashed poor little Jenny's face, would he?
Will you leave me alone?
It's your soul that's hurting you, Bill, and not me. We've been through it all ourselves. Come with us, Bill, to a brave manhood on earth and eternal glory in heaven. Come! Oh, there you are, Dolly.
Mr. Undershaft, you came. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Cousins.
Let me introduce you to a new friend of mine, Mr. Bill Walker. This is my bloke, Bill, Mr. Cousins.
Mr. Bill Walker.
You gonna marry him?
I am. Do you hear that, Papa?
Loud and clear, my dear.
God help him. God help him.
Why? Do you think he won't be happy with me?
I've only had to stand it for a morning. He'll have to stand it for a lifetime.
Well, that is a frightful reflection, Mr. Walker. But I can't tear myself away from Major Barbara.
Well, I can. Here, do you know where I'm going to and what I'm
going
to do?
Yes. You're going to heaven and you're coming back before the week's out to tell me so.
You lie. I'm going to Canning Town to spit in Todger Fairmile's eye. I bashed Jenny Hill's face, and now I'll get my own face bashed and come back and show it to her. He'll hit me harder than I hit her. That'll make us square. You, sir, is that fair or is it not? You're a gentleman. You ought to know.
Two black eyes won't make one white one, Bill.
I didn't ask you. Can you never keep your mouth shut? I asked a gentleman.
I think you're right, Mr. Walker. Yes, I should do it. It's curious. It's exactly what an ancient Greek would have done.
But what good will it do?
Well, it'll give Mr. Fairmile some exercise, and it will satisfy Mr. Walker's soul.
Rot. There ain't no such a thing as a soul. How can you tell whether I have a soul or not? You've never seen it.
I've seen it hurting you when you went against it.
If you was my girl and took the word out of my mouth like that, I'll give you something you'd feel hurting, so I would. Take my tip, mate. Stop her jaw or you'll die afore your time. War out. That's what you'll be. War out.
I wonder.
Dolly!
Yes, my dear, it's very wearing to be in love with you. If it lasts, I quite think I shall die young.
Should you mind?
Oh, not at all.
It's all right, Papa. We've not forgotten you.
I wonder.
Dolly, explain the place to Papa. I haven't time. I'm taking Snobby Price out into the streets to give his confession to the masses. Mr. Price, are you ready?
Coming, Major Barbara.
Might as well make myself at home.
Well, don't get too comfortable.
I won't. I fancy you guess something of what is in my mind, Mr. Cousins. Exactly so. But suppose Barbara finds you out.
And Lady Britomart already has. You know, I do not admit that I'm imposing on Barbara. I am quite genuinely interested in the views of the Salvation Army. The fact is, I'm a sort of collector of religions. And the curious thing is that I find I can believe them all. By the way, have you any religion?
Yes.
Anything out of the common?
Only that there are two things necessary to salvation.
Ah, the church catechism. Yeah, Charles Lomax also belongs to the established church.
The two things are...
baptism and...
money and gunpowder.
That is the general opinion of our governing classes. The novelty is in hearing any man confess it.
Just so.
Excuse me, is there any place in your religion for honour, justice, truth, love, mercy, and so forth?
Yes, they are the graces and luxuries of a rich, strong, and safe life.
Suppose one is forced to choose between them and money or gunpowder?
Choose money and gunpowder. For without enough of both, you cannot afford the others.
That's your religion?
It is.
Barbara won't stand that. She'll have to choose between your religion and Barbara.
So will you, my friend. She will find out that that drum of yours is hollow.
Father Undershaft, you are mistaken. I am a sincere Salvationist.
Hmm.
You do not understand the Salvation Army. It is the army of joy, of love, of courage. It has banished the fear and remorse and despair of the old hell-ridden evangelical sects. It marches to fight the devil with trumpet and drum, with music and dancing, with banner and palm, as becomes a sally from heaven by its happy garrison. It picks the waster out of the public house and makes a man of him. It finds a worm wriggling in the back kitchen, and lo, a woman. Men and women of rank, too, sons and daughters of the highest. It takes the poor professor of Greek, the most artificial and self-suppressed of human creatures, from his meal of roots and lets loose the rhapsodist in him, reveals the true worship of Dionysus to him, sends him down the public street drumming dithyrambs.
You will alarm the shelter.
Oh, they are accustomed to these sudden ecstasies of piety. You remember what Euripides says about your money and gunpowder?
I do not.
One and another, in money and guns, may outpass his brother, and men in their millions float and flow and seethe with a million hopes as leaven, and they win their will or they miss their will, and their hopes are dead or are pined for still, but whoe'er can know, as the long days go, that to live is happy, has found his heaven. My own translation, what do you think of it?
I think, my friend, that if you wish to know, as the long days go, that to live is happy, you must first acquire money enough for a decent life and power enough to be your own master.
No, you're damnably discouraging. Is it so hard a thing to see that the Spirit of God, whate'er it be, the law that abides and changes not, ages long, the eternal and nature-born, these things be strong? What else is wisdom? What of man's endeavour? Or God's high grace, so lovely and so great? To stand from fear set free, to breathe and wait, to hold a hand uplifted over fate. And shall not Barbara be loved forever?
Euripides mentions Barbara, does he?
Well, it's a fair translation. The word means loveliness.
May I ask, as Barbara's father, how much a year she is to be loved forever on?
As Barbara's father, that is more your affair than mine. I can feed her by teaching Greek, that's about all.
Do you consider it a good match for her?
But Mr. Undershaft, I am, in many ways, a weak, timid, ineffectual person, and my health is far from satisfactory. But whenever I feel that I must have anything, I get it, sooner or later. I feel that way about Barbara. I don't like marriage. I feel intensely afraid of it. And I don't know what I shall do with Barbara or what she will do with me, but I feel that I and nobody else must marry her. Please regard that as settled. Not that I wish to be arbitrary, but why should I waste your time in discussing what is inevitable?
You mean that you will stick at nothing, not even the conversion of the Salvation Army to the worship of Dionysus?
The business of the Salvation Army is to save, not to wrangle about the name of the Pathfinder. Dionysus or another, what does it matter?
Professor Cousins, you are a young man after my own heart.
Mr. Undershaft? You are, as far as I'm able to gather, a most infernal old rascal. But you appeal very strongly to my sense of ironic humour.
And now to business.
Oh, pardon me, we were discussing religion. Why go back to such an uninteresting and unimportant subject as business?
Religion is our business at present, because it is through religion alone that we can win Barbara.
Have you, too, fallen in love with Barbara?
Yes, with a father's love.
Oh, a father's love for a grown-up daughter is the most dangerous of all infatuations. I apologize for mentioning my own pale, coy, mistrustful fancy in the same breath with it.
Keep to the point. We have to win her, and we are neither of us Methodists.
No, that doesn't matter. The power Barbara wields here, the power that wields Barbara herself, is not Calvinism, not Presbyterianism, not Methodism.
Not Greek paganism either, eh?
Well, I admit that. Barbara is quite original in her religion.
Aha! Barbara Undershaft would be. Her inspiration comes from within herself.
How do you suppose it got there?
It is the Undershaft inheritance. I shall hand on my torch to my daughter. She shall make my converts and preach my gospel.
What? Money and gunpowder?
Yes, money and gunpowder, freedom and power, command of life and command of death.
This is extremely interesting, Mr. Undershaft. Of course, you know that you are mad.
And you?
Oh, mad as a hatter. You are welcome to my secret, since I have discovered yours. But I'm astonished. Can a madman make cannons?
Would anyone else than a madman make them? And now, question for question, can a sane man translate Euripides?
Absolutely not.
Can a sane woman make a man of a waster, or a woman of a worm? Are there two mad people or three in this salvation shelter today?
You mean Barbara is as mad as we are?
Pooh, Professor, let us call things by their proper names. I am a millionaire, you are a poet. Barbara is a saviour of souls. What have we three to do with the common mob of slaves and idolaters?
Take care. Barbara is in love with the common people. So am I. Have you never felt the romance of that love?
Have you ever been in love with poverty, like St. Francis? Have you ever been in love with dirt, like St. Simeon? Have you ever been in love with disease and suffering, like our nurses and philanthropists? Such passions are not virtues, but the most unnatural of all the vices. This love of the common people may please an earl's granddaughter and a university professor, but I have been a common man and a poor man, and it has no romance for me. Leave it to the poor to pretend that poverty is a blessing. Leave it to the coward to make a religion of his cowardice by preaching humility. We know better than that. We three must stand together above the common people. How else can we help their children to climb up beside us? Barbara must belong to us, not to the Salvation Army.
Well, I can only say that if you think you'll get her away from the Salvation Army by talking to her as you've been talking to me, you don't know Barbara.
My friend, I never ask for what I can buy.
Do I understand you to imply that you can buy Barbara?
No, but I can buy the Salvation Army.
Quite impossible.
You shall see. All religious organizations exist by selling themselves to the rich.
You really are an infernal old rascal.
Once I've got the army, I'll have Barbara.
In episode one of Major Barbara by George Bernard Shaw, Barbara was played by Eleanor Tomlinson and Adolphus Cousins by Jack Farthing. Undershaft was played by Matthew Marsh, Lady Britomart by Rebecca Front, and Stephen by Joel McCormack. Charles Lomax was played by Kieran Hodgson, Sarah by Scarlett Brooks, and Morrison by Brian Prothero. Jenny Hill was played by Nicola Ferguson, Mrs. Baines by Susan Jameson, and Bill Walker by Ewan Bailey. Snobby Price was played by Sargon Yelda, Rowan Mitchins by A.B. Allen, and Peter Shirley by Sean Baker. The concertina was played by Colin Guthrie, and the cornet by Peter Ringrose. The director was Tracy Neal.
And you can hear the second part of Major Barbara at the same time next week.
John Snow and Trevor MacDonald present their choice of books.
This
is the beginning. This is what led to where we are now. This is why Obama is there. This is why we have a black man in the president.
Discussing what makes a good read.
It was true of all days. It was the trite truth of any day. But it was truer today than on any day. There never was a day like this, nor ever would or could be again.
The new series of A Good Read starts on Tuesday afternoon at 4:30 on BBC Radio 4.
BBC News at 4:00. Sir John Major has accused the Leave campaign of being deceitful and dishonest and trying to mislead voters. The former Conservative Prime Minister, who wants Britain to remain in the EU, said he was angry that people were presenting information they knew to be inaccurate. The Leave campaign rejected the criticism and said it stood by the figures it was using. But the former Liberal Democrat Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, agreed with Sir John.
There is something fundamentally dishonest about claiming that you will regain control when actually in many respects you lose control by refusing to take decisions in common with other countries. It's a deception to say that you can enjoy the benefits of being part of a single market once you've left it, self-evidently. It is untrue to say that you will be able to sort of solve immigration if you leave the European Union.
Switzerland's referendum on giving everyone a guaranteed basic income has seen the idea comprehensively rejected. Voters had been asked whether they supported a payment of about £1,700 a month to people, even if they had no job. Opponents of the measure had warned it would attract more economic migrants. Iraqi forces say they have secured the southern edge of the city of Fallujah, which they are trying to retake from the Islamic State militant group. A major offensive was launched 2 weeks ago. An Iraqi commander said his forces were poised to enter the main city. Police investigating the murder of a pensioner from Suffolk have arrested a 61-year-old man in Leicester. A body, believed to be that of Peter Stewart, who was 75 and lived in Weybred, was found close to his home on Friday night. His wife Sylvia is still missing. A woman who saved Jewish families from the Nazis during the Second World War has become the first Swedish saint in more than 600 years. Elizabeth Hesselblad was canonised by Pope Francis at a ceremony in St Peter's Square. She hid 12 people in the convent in Rome, where she was Mother Superior in the final months of the war. BBC News.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's hot-footed it across town from 6 Music to 4 Extra. Please welcome your host, Mr. Sean Keaveney.
Forget your Grammys and Oscars. There's only one awards ceremony that everyone's talking about. Well, nearly everyone. Mainly animals, really. The Natural Histories Comedy Awards, presented by yours truly.
The nominees include...
Crikey, that was close. Did I get you? Sorry, but accident-prone us meteorites.
I'm Archie Toothless, giant squid.
Nature, as you've never heard it before, the Natural Histories Comedy Awards next Friday evening from 10 on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
In half an hour, your poetry requests here on Radio 4, ranging from Keats to Attila the Stockbroker. We'll be joining Roger McGough in half an hour. Before that, it's our monthly date with Book Club. Here's James Naughtie.
Welcome to Book Club. Tony Harrison has been publishing poetry for more than 50 years. I won't describe him as a grand old man of British poetry because that doesn't seem to be the right kind of title. He's never been at all grand.